helpless ship into dust. The salvo didn't come. Instead, the Springhawk slowed, waiting for the Nicardoon's momentum to bring it closer. The Chiss ship moved up and over, settling itself above the Nicardoon's dorsal sensor ridge, out of line from the remaining flank-side weapons clusters. On the tactical, the green lines of two tractor beams winked into existence, connecting the two ships. The hazy circle of a crippler net spun out from the Springhawk's hull between the tractor beam projectors and wrapped itself around the Nicardoon vessel, sending a high-voltage charge through the hull and eliminating the possibility that the crew might activate a scuttling system. And as the Springhawk turned toward hyperspace, all the pieces finally fell into their pattern. The escaping shuttle, running on automatic, Kilori realized now, had indeed been a diversion. But not for a second Chiss ship. It was just Thrawn. And he'd brought them to that particular spot because he wanted the Nicardoon to chase him. This whole thing had never been about death, destruction, infiltration, or even just delivering Yiv a message. Thrawn had simply dropped by, hoping to capture a Nicardoon ship. And he'd done it.
Pathfinder? Thrawn's voice came from right behind him. Kilori jerked.
Yes, Captain?
He managed. We'll be traveling to a nearby system to hand off our prize, Thrawn said. Said it so casually, too, as if they'd just picked up an order of groceries from the corner shop. After that, we'll be returning to Concourse 447. Will you need rest time before we leave?
No, not for a while,
Kilori said.
Thrawn might not sound anxious to leave this neighborhood behind, but Kilori, sure as the Great Presence was.
Good, Thrawn said. I trust you found the exercise interesting.
With an effort, Kilori flattened his winglets against his cheeks.
Yes, Captain,
he said.
Very interesting indeed.
It wasn't easy for even a Pathfinder to requisition a ship for his own personal use. But Kilori had been at Concourse 447 long enough to build up a collection of owed favors. More important, he had a collection of blackmail material on several key people. Between the favors and the threats, he soon found himself speeding away from the station, bound for the Primea system, capital of the Vac Combine. 35 hours later, he was there. Primea was in the early stage of a Nicardoon conquest, which meant Yiv was still greeting and meeting with planetary leaders, talking about the benefits of joining the Nicardoon destiny, and letting his orbiting warships provide a silent warning of what would happen if they refused. Kilori gave his name and the urgency of his mission to the first gatekeeper, and the second gatekeeper, and the third. 6 hours after his arrival, he was finally ushered into Yiv's throne room, aboard the battle dreadnought, Deathless.
Ha-ha! Kilori!
Yiv called, his cheerful, booming voice echoing in the oppressive stillness of the throne room. Draped over his shoulders, like living epaulets, were the fungoid strands of the strange creatures he'd taken on as symbionts. His cleft jaw was open in what passed for a smile with Nicardoon, but which Kilori had always thought looked more like a predator preparing to strike. At least he was in a good mood, Kilori thought with a tinge of relief. The talks with the Vax must be going well.
Come, tell me what news you bring from the lips of the Great Presence.
Kilori grimaced as he walked the gauntlet between the two lines of watchful Nicardoon soldiers. Yiv was mocking him, of course, as he mocked or dismissed all who didn't believe solely in the godhood of Yiv himself. But right now, the benevolent's famous ego wasn't nearly as concerning as his somewhat less famous temper. Kilori had never brought Yiv bad news before. He had no idea how such messengers were treated.
"I bring you news from Rapak, your benevolence,"
he said, stopping between the last pair of guards in the gauntlet and dropping forward to lie face down on the cold deck at Yiv's feet.
"News and a warning."
"That news has been delivered,"
Yiv said, his earlier jovial manner vanishing like morning dew under twin suns.
"Do you presume to waste my time with a story I already know?"
"Not at all, your benevolence,"
Kilori said, his back itching with the eyes and weapons that were undoubtedly ranged on it.
"I expected you would have heard one of your blockade frigates had been captured. What I came here to add to that tale is the name of the being responsible."
"You were the navigator on his ship?"
"Yes, your benevolence. He asked specifically for me."
For a long moment, Yiv remained silent. Kilori held his position, trying to ignore the creeping sensation rippling through his skin.
"Rise, Pathfinder,"
Yiv said at last.
"Rise and tell me all."
With a sense of relief, Kilori scrambled to his feet. Something tapped his shoulders. A short but sharp blow. Hastily, he dropped back to his knees.
"The Chiss came and hired me."
"His name, Kilori,"
Yiv said, his voice soft and deadly.
"I already know the ship was Chiss. I want his name."
Kilori's winglets fluttered.
"Thrawn! Senior Captain Thrawn!"
"His full name."
The winglets stiffened in panic.
I don't know,"
he breathed.
"I never heard it."
"And you didn't bother to learn it for me?"
"I'm sorry,"
Kilori said, staring at Yiv's feet, not daring to raise his eyes to that jovial, implacable face. He was going to die today, he knew with a dark sense of his fragile mortality. The great presence awaited him. Would he be absorbed and lost forever? Or would he be deemed worthy to ride the hyperspace ridges, guiding future pathfinders through the chaos? For a long moment, the room was silent.
"You will meet him again,"
Yiv said at last.
"When you do, you will obtain for me his full name."
"Of course, your benevolence, of course,"
Kilori said quickly, fearing the hope singing suddenly through him. "Mercy? From Yiv the Benevolent?" No, of course not. Yiv felt no mercy. Kilori was simply a tool that was still worth keeping. For the moment.
"Return to your station," Yiv said. "Guide your ships. Do your job. Live your pathetic little life. And bring me his name."
"I will,"
Kilori promised.
"While breath remains in me, I will never cease to serve you."
"Exactly,"
Yiv said, a hint of his usual humor finally peeking through the blackness.
"While breath remains in you."
Memories 6.
General Bakif finished reading through the proposal and looked up from his questis.
"You're serious, Junior Commander," he said flatly. "Quite serious, General,"
Junior Commander Thrawn confirmed.
"I'm convinced the Leo Aeoan government is connected to the pirates that have hit our shipping off Shisa and Pesfavri over the past few months.
And you think this Pathfinder knows about it?
Kilori, Thrawn said. Yes. He knows, or at least suspects.
It would be hard to keep a secret like that from the Navigators Guild,
Bakeef agreed, again studying the numbers. A jump by jump from Leo Aeon space to the affected Ascendancy worlds would certainly be safer for those with criminal intent. No need to involve outside witnesses. But such a voyage would take at least 3 weeks of travel each way. Under the circumstances, it wasn't unreasonable that the pirates might opt for speed and efficiency, relying on guild confidentiality to keep their secret.
You're sure the ships are the same?
The designs are different enough to preclude obvious connections, Thrawn said. But there are notable similarities that go beyond mere functionality. Bakeef nodded. He'd had a couple of conversations with Mid-Captain Ziara about Thrawn's theories of art and tactics, and they'd reluctantly concluded that neither of them had whatever spark of insight or genius, or insanity, was required to make the connections that Thrawn seemed to intuitively grasp. But just because they couldn't see it didn't mean he was wrong.
Assume you're right, he said. Further assume you can prove it. What then?
A frown creased Thrawn's forehead. They've attacked ships of the Ascendancy, he said, as if expecting a hidden trap in Bakeef's words. We deal out punishment.
And if the Leo Aeoi themselves aren't involved? Bakeef asked. What if the pirates merely bought or hired Leo Aeoan ships?
I wasn't suggesting we attack the Leo Aeoan regime or worlds, Thrawn said. Merely the pirates.
If you can distinguish them from the innocents, Bakeef warned. We have little data on current Leo Aeoan ship design. For that matter, the Leo Aeoi and pirates both could have bought the same style ship from a third party.
I understand, Thrawn said. But I believe I'll be able to make it clear which ships are enemies and which are friends.
I'll settle for which are enemies and which are neutrals, Bakeef said sourly. The Ascendancy has barely even acknowledged the existence of others out there, let alone shown any interest in pursuing friendships with any of them.
Enemies and neutrals, then, Thrawn amended. If I can't make a clear distinction, I'll take no action. For a moment, Bakeef eyed him. The man was clever enough, and Bakeef had seen his strategic and tactical abilities. The question was whether he had perhaps just a little too much confidence in himself. If he did, and if that confidence made him overstep the line, some operation in the future could blow up in his face. Possibly the very operation he was now proposing. But this particular group of pirates was becoming more than just a nuisance. They needed to be dealt with before someone out there got the idea that the Ascendancy could be attacked with impunity. If Thrawn thought he'd found the handle they needed, it was worth giving him a shot.
Very well, Junior Commander, he said. How many ships will you need?
Just two, sir. Thrawn considered. No. Actually, it would be best if I had three. The sense of the great presence faded, and Kilori removed his headset to find that they'd arrived. The heart world of the Leo Aeoan regime stretched out before them, green and blue and white, encircled by a swarm of freighters, couriers, docking and repair stations, and watchful military patrol ships. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Thrawn lean forward.
Well?
Kilori asked carefully. For a few seconds, Thrawn was silent. Then he nodded. Yes, he said. These are the ships. Kilori winced
his cheek winglets stiffening.
Are you certain?
Quite certain, Thrawn said. The design of the patrol craft are similar enough to those of the pirate ships to leave no doubt.
I see,
Kilori said. He didn't, actually. To him, the patrol ships looked nothing like the ones the Leo Aeoan Corsairs used. But what he thought didn't matter. Thrawn was convinced, and if he got word back to the Ascendancy, there was likely to be a highly lethal response. And it was just as likely that more than a few Pathfinders would be caught in the middle. Whether Thrawn could actually get that word to anyone who mattered, of course, was the crucial question. Their freighter was already deep enough into the planet's gravity well that the hyperdrive was useless, and their current course was taking them ever deeper. If Thrawn veered off right now and headed back toward deep space, they might get clear before someone started to wonder why a Chiss freighter had suddenly decided it didn't want to do business with the Leo Aeoi after all. But Kilori didn't hold out much hope that Thrawn would be smart enough to simply cut and run. Again, he was right.
I need a closer look, Thrawn said, taking the helm controls and angling deeper into the gravity well toward a pair of patrol ships floating beside one of the repair docks. I suspect the ship inside that station is one of those that recently attacked the Massor system.
This is a bad idea,
Kilori warned, his winglets pressing tightly against his cheeks.
If the Leo Aeoan regime is involved with the pirates, you risk stirring up a massive stinger nest.
Are you saying the regime is involved? Thrawn asked coolly, turning those glowing red eyes onto Kilori.
Kilori gazed back, cursing himself for saying even that much. The first thing every navigational group learned when it joined the Navigators Guild was that it was forbidden to speak about one client to another. The most heinous criminal activity needed to be as safe from exposure as the most innocent freighter passage or military exercise. But right now, breaches of protocol were the least of Kilori's worries. Just before they arrived here, right when his trance was lifting, he'd sensed through the Great Presence that there were fellow Pathfinders nearby. If they were aboard some of the Corsairs, and if any of those Corsairs were prepped for flight, they could follow Kilori effortlessly through hyperspace, no matter how many jinks or recoursings Thrawn tried. And none of the Corsairs were likely to care if silencing a troublesome Chiss also required the death of an innocent Pathfinder.
I don't know if the regime is part of it, he said. Just trust me when I say this isn't a safe place to be.
Thrawn wasn't listening. He was staring out at the ships and docks. His glowing eyes narrowed slightly.
I mean it,
Kilori said, trying one final time.
If they suspect you're hunting pirates...
You think they only suspect, Thrawn echoed.
He cocked his head.
Yes, point taken. Let's remove any lingering doubts.
He keyed the comm, and suddenly, it was as if he'd lost his senses.
Alert,
Thrawn called.
I've found the pirates. Repeat, I've found them. Get out of here and report back.
Kilori gasped.
What in... Thrawn!
Thrawn keyed off the comm.
There, he said, his voice and expression back to their usual coolness. Now they know for certain.
What in the depths did you do?
Kilori said in a strangled voice.
You've just painted a death mark on us! They'll be coming after us!
There they go,
Thrawn said, pointing at a spot on the main display. Kilori looked at the display in time to see a ship flicker and disappear into hyperspace.
My second ship, Thrawn identified. One of my colleagues is aboard, with one of yours navigating it back to the Ascendancy.
He turned the helm yoke over, and the freighter curved smoothly away from the planet.
And now, as you suggest, it's time to leave.
Yes, let's,
Kilori muttered, slumping in his chair as Thrawn ran the thrusters to full power. The patrol ships were starting to move, and as Kilori looked up at the high-orbit docking bays, he saw three Corsairs emerge, their own thrusters blazing as they angled toward him and Thrawn, hoping to intercept them before they could escape into hyperspace. Either Thrawn also saw them, or else he'd anticipated the response. He was already on it, shifting the freighter's course onto a vector that would slip it past the potential trap. But it would do him no good. The Corsairs were on the move, and if there were Pathfinders aboard, there was nothing Thrawn could do to prevent them from following him back to Chiss space. They would get him and the oh-so-clever backup ship that had already left, and the Leo Aeon ships would continue to attack and plunder everyone in the region. Maybe the Corsairs would try to rescue Kilori and the other Pathfinder before they destroyed the Chiss ships. Probably they wouldn't. But at this point, all he could do was hope.
Where are we going?
He asked as they approached the edge of the gravity well.
Kynos, Thrawn said. It's the closest system, and there should be fast couriers there who can take our message to Chila and Naporar.
Fine,
Kilori said, setting his hands on the controls. Maybe one of the two Chiss freighters would at least be able to send a message before the Corsairs jammed their transmissions and then destroyed them. Probably they wouldn't. The trance this time was one of the hardest Kilori had ever experienced. On top of the usual course intricacies was an overlaid mesh of dark and distracting images. Visions of pursuing ships guided by fellow Pathfinders. He nearly lost the path more times than he cared to remember. And twice he was forced to return to space normal to regain his connection to the Great Presence. Thrawn said nothing during those retrenchments, probably dreaming of glory for ending the pirate menace or assuming the course stutters would throw off any pursuit. The other Chiss freighter had already arrived when they finally reached the Kynos system. Kilori could see its thrusters in the distance ahead, driving the vessel toward the planet. Even as Kilori finished rising from his trance, Thrawn had taken the controls and turned to follow. Futility. Even before the thrusters were up to full power, four Leo Aeon Corsairs winked into view on the aft display.
Ah, Thrawn said, still with that maddening calm. Our guests have arrived.
I'm so surprised,
Kilori muttered.
I doubt that, Thrawn said. I did some study on the Pathfinders after our first encounter. Your colleagues can track you through hyperspace, can they not?
Kilori shot him a startled look. That was supposed to be a deep, dark secret.
No, not true.
I think it is.
Thrawn gestured to the aft display.
The Pathfinder style was evident in the last pirate attack. I hoped you and I would arrive at the Leo Aeon Heartworld before those navigators were returned to their bases.
You wanted them to follow us?
Of course, Thrawn said, as if it was obvious. With any other navigators, there would be uncertainty as to their emergence point, if indeed they were able to follow us at all. With Pathfinders aboard, I could be sure the pirates would arrive precisely where I wanted them.
You mean right on top of us?
Kilori retorted. He looked again at the aft display and felt his winglets go rigid. Where there had been four ships behind them, there were now five. The four Leo Aeon Corsairs he'd already seen, and a Chiss warship.
Meet Captain Ziara. This is Junior Commander Thrawn.
Thrawn called toward the comm.
I believe your targets await you.
Indeed they do, Commander.
A soft female voice came back.
I suggest you continue on your present course. It should give you the best view of their destruction.
Chapter 8.
Interesting,
Supreme General Barkeef commented as he set his questus aside. He'd read the report twice, Arulani had noted, as she watched his eyes move back and forth across the text. The first time she'd ever seen him do that. Either he'd been trying to glean as much information as he could, or else he was stalling while he tried to figure out what to say and do about it.
You realize, of course, that stealing someone else's ship, under any circumstance, is a serious breach of regulations.
The Nicardune ships attacked us, sir, Thrawn said. I understood that regulations permit self-defense.
Absolutely, Barkeef said. And if you'd blown the damn thing to dust, no one would have given it a second thought. But capturing it? He shook his head. And you, Admiral? I know you and Thrawn have a long history, but I'm a little surprised that you agreed to be a part of this.
Actually, General, I made a point of refreshing my memory on the regulations before I accepted Captain Thrawn's proposal, Arulani said, mentally crossing her fingers. There's nothing that specifically says capturing an attacker's ship is a violation.
I think you'll find it falls under the general heading of preemptive strikes, Barkeef said. Which is definitely how certain of the Aristocra will interpret it once they hear about this. Some of them might even demand the ship be returned.
Without its crew, Thrawn said. That might be a bit awkward.
Arulani felt her throat tighten. More than just a bit awkward, given that the Nicardune crew was gone because they'd committed mass suicide minutes before the Chiss boarding parties breached the hatches. For a while, she'd rather hoped it had at least been a combination of murder and suicide, with perhaps the officers under orders to slaughter their warriors before taking their own lives. That would have indicated that it was only a few of the Nicardune that were that fanatical. But the medic team had concluded that all the deaths had been self-inflicted. What kind of compulsion and dominance did this Yiv the Benevolent hold over them that they would willingly go to such violent extremes?
True enough, Barkeef conceded. Well, until the syndics decide to write specifics into the law, I suppose we can treat it as a gray area.
He tapped the questus.
In the meantime, what kind of hellish night hunter nest have you just kicked over?
A night hunter nest that I believe will soon be hunting us, Thrawn said grimly. They clearly know about the Ascendancy. They also feel confident enough in their own strength to slaughter a refugee ship right on our threshold. And, he gestured to the questus, they're already moving into our outer neighborhood.
Barkeef huffed out a breath, looking back at the questus as if the data on it might suddenly change to something less disquieting.
You're sure they've had contact with the Leo Aeoan regime? He asked. I looked at all the indicators you marked, and I confess I can't see whatever it is you think you've found.
It's there, sir, Thrawn said. It's subtle, but it's there.
What we don't know, Arulani put in, is whether this is evidence that they've been to the Leo Aeoan Heartworld itself, or whether they've just picked up some Leo Aeoi art and artistic influences along the way from someone else.
That's why we need to go to the Heartworld in person, Thrawn said. I need to examine the local situation. And I can't do that from transmission analysis or even third-person investigator reports.
You know what the Syndicure will say about anyone going to the Leo Aeoan regime, Barkeef warned. Especially you two.
That's why we wanted to keep it quiet, Arulani said. And the expansionary fleet does have a fair degree of flexibility in its duties.
Which I'm no longer in direct command of,
Bakif reminded her, glancing with an odd sort of wistfulness around his new Chila office. Arlani could sympathize. This office was bigger than his old expansionary defense fleet office on Naparar, as befit his newly exalted position as the Ascendancy's top general. But the office was on Chila, which meant that it was not only under the planet's frozen surface, but also within downwind spitting distance of the Sindicure and the rest of the Ascendancy's governmental centers. And just because the Aristocra weren't supposed to interfere with military matters didn't mean they were pleasant to be around.
But you are in overall command of personnel in the fleet,
Thrawn pointed out.
A directive from you would surely be acknowledged and carried out.
The Springhawk is undergoing hull repairs, but we could take the Vigilant,
Arlani said.
Thrawn could come aboard as an officer or even just a passenger and take a quick, unobtrusive look.
Pakeef snorted.
You know what certain syndics think of your definition of unobtrusive.
He glanced at his desk monitor and gave a small snort.
And by sheer coincidence, or perhaps not, two of those syndics have just arrived in my inner office.
Arlani's first impulse was to urge the general not to let them in, but it would be a useless gesture. Clearly someone had spotted her and Thrawn coming here. Just as clearly, the two syndics weren't going to go away just because the Defense Force's Supreme General told them to. Official policies of separation of duties or not, non-interference or not, the confrontation the syndics were obviously here for was going to happen. Might as well have it out now. Bakif had apparently come to the same conclusion. He tapped a key, and the door slid open.
Welcome, syndics,
he said briskly, as the three officers rose to their feet.
How may I serve you?
Arlani turned to face the newcomers. Mithurfia Niko, one of the syndics of Thrawn's family, led the way. That was standard procedure whenever the family wanted to deliver a message to the military regarding one of their own without tugging on any of the tangled web of interfamily politics. Striding along close behind him was Irizi Stalmustro, one of the syndics of Aralani's former family. She felt her eyes narrow. That was not standard procedure. Thurfian might be here to talk about Thrawn on behalf of the Myth, but she was no longer part of the Irizi family, which meant Zistalmu had no reason to talk about her to Bakif. But there was an even more interesting subtext about this whole thing. Given the intense rivalry between the Irizi and Myth, two syndics from those families who wanted to see Bakif on general military matters would normally have arranged to come one at a time, not together. Or was that the point? Could Thurfian and Zistalmu have worked up this joint meeting to underscore a high-level opposition to Thrawn's recent activities? A resistance that superseded family politics?
Good day, General,
Zistalmu said, inclining his head to Bakif.
Admiral, Senior Captain,
he added, making the same gestures to Arlani and Thrawn.
Are we interrupting anything important?
I was discussing an upcoming mission with two of the expansionary fleet's finest officers,
Bakif said.
Really?
Thurfian said, with a feigned enthusiasm that wouldn't fool a child.
Given the presence of Captain Thrawn, may we assume this mission is connected to the report the fleet submitted to the Sindicure 3 days ago?
Arlani stifled a curse. Normally, reports from the fleet could sit on the Syndic's questuses for days or weeks without being read by anyone except their aides and the lower-ranking Aristocra. At the moment, that was especially true of any report that didn't connect to the Chila attack investigation. Apparently, at least for these two, Thrawn's name garnered the same level of notice.
We submitted several reports that day,
Bakif said.
Which one specifically are you referring to?
You know perfectly well which one,
Sistalmu said, his eyes shifting to Thrawn.
The unauthorized intrusion into an alien system and the subsequent attack on alien ships in that system.
First of all, the Springhawk's mission to the Rapak system was not unauthorized,
Bakif said.
As you know, there was an attack on the edge of the Dioya system.
An attack against aliens,
Sistalmu cut in.
Meanwhile, the question of the attack on Chila, an attack launched against actual Chiss citizens, has yet to be resolved.
I trust you're not suggesting the fleet is incapable of handling more than one investigation at a time,
Bakif said, putting some stone into his voice.
Not at all,
Sistalmu said.
But if investigation was the goal, I would submit that Captain Thrawn's attack at Rapak went far beyond his orders and mandate. Yet I see no indication that the tribunal has been seated or even scheduled.
The Springhawk was attacked, Bakif said. Standing orders allow him the right of defense. Within very narrow and sharply delineated limits,
Thurfian put in.
But that's the past, and a matter for a tribunal. Our major concern is for the future. So I ask again, does this proposed mission relate to the Rapak attack?
He threw an accusing look at Thrawn.
Time is not so long, nor memory so short, that we've forgotten his old Leo Eoan fiasco.
I'm hardly likely to forget it either, Thrawn said quietly.
Quietly, but Ar'alani could hear the hidden embarrassment and ache in his voice.
I trust you aren't here just to scrub at old wounds,
she put in, hoping to draw some of Zistalmu's attack in her direction. It was a waste of effort. Thurfian merely shot her a brief, unreadable look, then returned his attention to his primary target.
As I already stated, we're looking to the future, not the past,
he said.
We understand you claim to have found Leo Eoan paintings or sculptures or some such on that illegally seized ship. I trust, Supreme General, you're not seriously thinking of letting Captain Thrawn anywhere near the Leo Eoan regime. Why not?
Bakif asked.
The Leo Aoi certainly hold their share of blame for what happened back then.
So you are sending him to the Heartworld,
Sistalmu said, pouncing on the words like a ground lion.
Are you mad?
I believe the Nicardoon have moved into the Leo Aoan regime,
Thrawn said.
We need to know whether the Leo Aoi have been completely subjugated, or whether they still stand against their would-be conquerors.
We need to know nothing of the kind,
Thurfian retorted.
What happens outside our borders is none of our business, as I thought was made clear to you the first time you meddled in that region's affairs.
And when the Nicardoon arrive in the Ascendancy?
Thrawn asked.
If the Nicardoon arrive in the Ascendancy,
Thurfian shot back.
Exactly,
Sistalmu seconded.
Really, Captain Thrawn? Someone of your vaunted tactical expertise can surely see that if we were such an enticing target, they would have moved against us already. It seems obvious to me that the stories told about us out in the chaos have warned them away.
Unless they're waiting until they have enough strength to defeat us,
Bakif said.
Fine,
Sistalmu said.
Let's look at that possibility, shall we? You claim the Nicardoon are subjugating other species and creating an empire, correct?
We've seen evidence of such activity, yes,
Bakif said.
And controlling a conquered species requires force and the presence of arms, does it not?
Arlani felt a sour taste in her mouth. She could see where Zistalmu was going with this, as too could Bakif.
It may require less than you imagine, the general said. If the planet is sufficiently subjugated, a few monitoring ships and a small ground contingent could easily suffice.
Especially if they utilize a system of hostages or extortion,
Arlani added.
The point remains that as they move toward us, they continue to bleed ships and troops,
Zistalmu said.
So the longer they wait, the less likely they are to be a threat.
But Keith shook his head.
It doesn't always work that way.
But it was a losing argument, Arlani could see from the expressions on the Syndic's faces. It might be a true argument, but it was also a losing one.
Yes, that too is a conversation for another day,
Thurfian said.
Since Captain Thrawn's ship is still undergoing repairs, and Admiral Arlani's is about to leave on a diplomatic mission, it would seem that nobody will be traveling to the Leoaoan regime.
Excuse me,
Bakif said, shooting a look at Arlani.
What diplomatic mission?
The Ascendancy is sending a new ambassador to Urch, the capital of Urchivki,
Thurfian said.
As the Vigilant is one of the finest warships in the expansionary fleet, and as its commander is one of the fleet's finest officers,
he inclined his head to Arlani.
It was decided that ship and commander would play host to Ambassador Boadil Pargasoy.
I see,
Bakif said, his tone going frosty.
And when were we to be informed of this decision?
You're being informed now, General,
Zistalmu said evenly.
The Vigilant will leave in 3 days.
Bakif looked at Arlani.
Can you be ready that quickly?
We can,
Arlani said, trying to keep her own irritation out of her voice. The Syndicure was not supposed to pull stunts like this. On the other hand, maybe they'd missed an angle. The Springhawk's repairs were supposed to take another 2 weeks, and Zistalmu was clearly expecting Thrawn to be out of commission that long. But much of the ship's damage was cosmetic, and as the Springhawk's captain, Thrawn could declare the ship ready to fly without those particular repairs being completed. If he did, by the time the Vigilant left for Urch, he could be nearly ready to pull the Springhawk out of Blue Dock and slip away for a surreptitious visit to the Leoaoan regime.
Sadly, though, Skywalker Abgar has been reassigned,
Zistalmu continued.
However, as the Springhawk won't be going anywhere for at least a couple of weeks, Skywalker Ciri and Caregiver Thalias have been transferred to your command.
As has Captain Thrawn,
Thurfian said.
He served under you once, and I'm sure his contributions will be equally welcome this time.
I imagine he'll welcome a chance to visit Urch,
Zistalmu said with a condescending little smile.
I understand their art galleries are the pride of the Urchivki people.
Arlani suppressed a sigh. So they hadn't missed a bet after all.
I'm sure he will, she said. I'll be honored to have him aboard.
With a sudden intake of breath, Ciri's hands twitched one final time against the controls. And as Thalias looked out the viewport, she saw the star flares disappear into the starry background and the blue and white half-circle directly ahead. They'd arrived at Urch. Thalias scowled at the planet. Big deal. She stole a look at Thrawn, standing with Ambassador Ilpart behind Arlani's command chair. Thrawn himself was unmoving and calm. Ilpart, in contrast, was opening and closing his hands and rocking slightly back and forth on his heels. clearly anxious to get to his new diplomatic post, and not very patient about the extra time it had taken the Vigilant to get here. Thalias stepped behind Ciri, rubbing gently against the tenseness of the girl's shoulder muscles and sending a mental glower in the direction of the grouchy ambassador. Ciri had had to make a small additional curve through the final section of the chaos leading into the Urch system, and the unexpected detour had made the Vigilant several hours late. In Thalias' experience, that sort of thing happened quite frequently, and neither Arulani nor Thrawn had blamed Ciri in the slightest for the delay, nor would any other reasonable person. Ilparg, unfortunately, didn't fall into that category. He was clearly used to the more well-defined travel parameters within the Ascendancy, and apparently had never understood that the term the Chaos wasn't simply someone's random idea of a good name. That made him an idiot. What made him a contemptible fool was that he hadn't been shy about voicing his opinions and criticisms within Ciri's hearing. Last night it had taken Thalias 2 hours of soothing, a good dinner and a hot bath, and every single one of her limited repertoire of lullabies to get Ciri to sleep.
"And what exactly is the delay now?"
Ilparg grumbled.
"We're waiting on the Urchiv Key controller to give us permission to launch your shuttle," Arulani explained.
"Yes, I understand that,"
Ilparg said testily.
"Wouldn't it be best if I was actually in the shuttle when that permission comes?"
"Patience, Ambassador," Thrawn said. Thalias winced. Of all the soothements Thrawn could have offered, patience was the one least likely to get him anywhere.
"I have all the patience I need, Senior Captain,"
Ilparg said acidly, glaring at Thrawn.
"What's needed here is results! Action and results! Since they don't seem to have noticed us, a second call would seem to be indicated."
"There," Thrawn said, pointing at a spot on the aft visual display.
"You see it?"
"Yes," Arulani said. "You're sure it's Leo Aeoin?"
Thalias felt her breath catch in her throat. Something was going on out there. She could tell by the expressions on Arulani's and Thrawn's faces, and by the matching tautness in their tones. Something was going on, and it wasn't good.
"Not 100%, no," Thrawn said. "Their ship design has changed since we saw it last. But there are enough similarities that I think it probable."
"What are you talking about?"
Ilparg demanded.
"What do the Leo Aoi have to do with anything? This is Urch!"
He shot a look at Ciri.
"Unless our navigator has gotten us lost again."
Thalias took a deep breath. Enough was enough.
"Excuse me, Ambassador?"
"This is Urch Planetarian Space Control,"
an alien voice erupted from the bridge speaker. Its Ta'arja mangled almost beyond recognition.
"This ship is not permitted to release shuttle. Repeat, this ship will not release shuttle. Ambassador of Chiss not welcome to her chief key, nor to her planets or space."
"That's impossible,"
Ilparg sputtered.
"A treaty was endorsed. The Sindicure approved it."
He drew himself up to his full height.
"Admiral Arulani, call him back,"
he ordered.
"Tell him you wish to speak with a senior member of the Tower Dimension."
"Quiet,"
Arulani said, her face turned to the tactical display.
"Kindly do not address me in that—"
"I said quiet," Arulani repeated.
She hadn't raised her voice, but suddenly an icy chill ran down Thalias's back. Ilparg clearly felt the threat in her voice, too. He opened his mouth to speak, seemed to think better of it, and fell silent.
"What do you think?" Thrawn asked.
"I count 8 ships visible," Arulani said. "The Leo Aeoin, 6 probable Urchiv, and that one."
"The Nicardune frigate," Thrawn said.
That's what I was thinking, Arlani agreed, her voice going a shade darker. That ridiculously large bridge viewport is a dead giveaway. The question is whether the Urchivki have been completely conquered, or if they are still in the same interdiction phase as the Pakash.
I'd guess the latter, Thrawn said. But on a practical level, as long as they're willing to do General Yiv's bidding, their precise status is irrelevant.
True, Arlani said.
Still, if they're planning to destroy us, they are certainly taking their time about it.
Destroy us?
Ilpar gasped.
There's no real hurry, Thrawn said, ignoring the ambassador's outburst. We're already too deep in the gravity well for a quick escape, and their net pattern is coming together nicely behind us.
Personally, I think they're going for a mirror payback,
Senior Captain Wootra-O put in.
Interesting thought, Arlani said. Rather ambitious of them.
What's a mirror payback?
Chiri whispered, looking up at Thalias. Thalias shook her head.
I don't know.
It's a counter-thrust by one side that exactly corresponds to an earlier stroke by the other,
Thrawn said, looking over at them.
In this case, Captain Wootra-O is suggesting the Nicardoon hope to capture the Vigilant in the same way that we captured one of their patrol ships.
Chiri's shoulder muscles went rock hard beneath Thalias's fingers.
No, she breathed. They... no...
Don't worry. They won't,
Arlani said. She hesitated a moment, then rose from the command chair and walked over to Chiri's navigation station.
You had trouble getting into the system, Skywalker Chiri, she said in a low voice.
I'm sorry,
Chiri breathed.
It was just...
Yes, I know, Arlani said,
a distracted sort of soothing drifting across the tightness of her voice.
I'm not blaming you. This part of the chaos is particularly nasty to navigate. My question is, just how solidly are we blocked in?
In other words, Thrawn added,
coming up beside Arlani,
are there particular exit vectors that would get us out faster and easier than any of the other routes?
Just take your time and think, Chiri,
Thalias said.
Being right is better than being fast.
She felt Chiri take a deep breath, watched the girl's hands move hesitantly across the controls and small displays of her board.
This way,
she said, moving her finger to a line about 30 degrees from the Vigilant's current heading.
That's not the way we came in,
Arlani said.
Because we would have to circle around even more,
Chiri said, some pleading in her voice.
And there were some big asteroids in the way. Ambassador Ilpark was already mad at me for how long it was taking.
It's all right, Chiri. It's all right, Arlani said.
This time the soothing sounded more genuine.
We just need to get out of here. Preferably faster and farther than they can easily follow us. Doesn't matter if it takes us out of the way to get back to the Ascendancy. Helm? Do you have the vector?
Yes, ma'am, the pilot confirmed.
Problem,
Wootra-O said.
We're going to have to angle outward to get to it. If we do that, we'll be moving right into their net.
Arlani pursed her lips.
Not necessarily. We won't necessarily move into their net?
Wootra-O asked, frowning.
We don't necessarily have to angle outward,
Arlani corrected. Pulling out her questus, she scribbled briefly on it.
Thrawn?
She asked, handing it to him. Thrawn peered at the questus.
The Vigilant wasn't really designed for this kind of maneuver,
he warned, as he handed the device to Wootra-O.
But I think it can handle the strain.
What strain?
Ilpark croaked, a layer of suspicion coating the fear in his voice.
What are you proposing?
Don't worry about it,
Wootra-O advised, tapping the Questis. Out of the corner of her eye, Thalia saw the image and data appear on one of the helm displays.
Meet Commander Roctremo?
I see it, ma'am,
the pilot said hesitantly.
Are you sure about this?
They want to take the Vigilant intact, Aurelani reminded him. One way or the other, this guarantees that doesn't happen. Execute.
Yes, ma'am.
Visibly bracing himself, Roctremo keyed his board. And with a sudden muted roar, as the thrusters ran to full power, the Vigilant leapt forward, aiming straight for the planet in front of them. Ilpar gave a strange sort of squeal.
Admiral!
He bleated.
What are you doing?
Course change one,
Aurelani said over the rumble.
3, 2, 1.
Outside the viewport, Urch moved off to the left as the Vigilant shifted its vector. At least, Thalias thought dimly, through the agonized pounding of blood in her head, they were now headed for the edge of the planet instead of straight toward its center. This way, the resounding crash would take a little longer to happen.
Urchiv ships moving in pursuit!
Wootra-O called from the sensor station.
Leo A.O. and hanging back. Nikar Dune ramping up power. Looks like he's going to try to cut us off. Increase speed 5%,
Aurelani ordered.
Course change 2. 3, 2, 1.
The planet moved a little more to the side, and now it looked like they were only going to cut through the edge of the atmosphere. Thalias tried to remember if she'd ever heard of a Chiss Night Dragon running at high speed through a planet's atmosphere, but she couldn't.
Urchiv ship's picking up speed,
Wootra-O announced.
But unless they've got a lot more in reserve, there's no way they can catch us. Ah, they figured that out. Dropping back. Any sign of intercept craft from the surface or behind the disk?
Aurelani asked.
Nothing detectable,
Wootra-O said.
At this point...
She broke off as the Vigilant gave a sudden lurch.
Entering atmosphere, Admiral,
Roctremo said.
Cutting deeper. Hull temperature starting to rise. No danger yet.
But there would be, Thalias knew. Her physics classes were only a vague memory, but she remembered enough to know there were good reasons why ships didn't move through planetary atmospheres at this speed.
What about the Nikar Dune?
Aurelani asked.
A little unclear. The turbulence is interfering with the sensors,
Wootra-O said.
But I think he's falling behind too.
The buffeting was growing stronger. Thalias knew she should find a seat and strap in, but she could sense Chiri's fear and didn't want to abandon the girl. She could almost hear the Vigilant groaning under the unfamiliar stresses and heat and pressure. Imagination, of course, but still she could hear the ship's agony.
Last course change,
Aurelani said abruptly into the muted cacophony.
Skywalker, get ready.
I am,
Chiri said, her voice trembling.
Course change. 3, 2, 1.
Roctremo keyed his board, and the Vigilant angled away from the planet one final time. The battering began to lessen, and suddenly, the haziness around the stars cleared, and the groaning faded away. They were again in the welcome vacuum of space, driving hard along the vector Chiri had pointed them to. The seconds ticked by, the Vigilant driving even harder toward the distant stars.
Clear for hyperspace,
Roctremo announced.
Skywalker,
Aurelani called.
Ready,
Chiri called back.
How far do you want to go?
As far as you can take us without stressing yourself,
Aurelani said.
Ready? Go!
The stars flared and then faded into hyperspace swirl, and they were once again safe.
You can let go now,
Thrawn said. Thalias blinked, only then realizing that somewhere along the line her grip on Chiri's shoulders had transferred into a grip on the back of the girl's chair. With an effort, she unlocked her fingers and took a step back.
We did it,
she said.
We did, Thrawn agreed. We of the fleet like to think of ourselves as heroes. Often, though, the true heroes are those who design and build the warships we take into battle.
There wasn't supposed to be any battle!
Ilpar growled. With the danger past, he was rapidly returning to his normal pomposity.
What was the meaning of all that?
The Nicardoon are attacking other worlds, Thrawn began.
The meaning?
Arulani interrupted him.
The meaning, Ambassador, is that this was a trap. Someone wanted to capture a Chiss ship, and they invited you to Urch to make it happen.
She smiled, just slightly.
You were the bait.
I am not bait,
Ilpark insisted.
Not for anyone. Not for the Urchivki. Not for these... What did you call them?
Nicardoon, Thrawn supplied.
And not for the Nicardoon,
Ilpark bit out.
And the Leo Aoi?
Arulani asked. Ilpark frowned at her.
What did the Leo Aoi have to do with it?
One of their ships was here, Arulani said. And they certainly didn't do or say anything to keep the Urchivki back from us. In fact, it looked to me like they were part of the net the Urchivki were setting up behind us,
Wutra'o added.
Oh, they were they?
Ilpark said, glaring at the rolling hyperspace swirl outside the viewport.
It certainly looked that way to me,
Wutra'o said.
Perhaps we should swing by the Leo Aeon Heartworld before we return to the Ascendancy,
Arulani suggested.
Talk to them. Maybe ask for an explanation?
Ilpark turned cold eyes to her.
You think we should do that, do you?
Arulani lifted a hand.
I merely offered the suggestion.
And an excellent suggestion it is,
Ilpark said.
Except that I don't intend to ask for an explanation. I intend to demand one.
He pointed dramatically toward the hyperspace swirl.
The Leo Aeon Heartworld, Admiral Arulani, at your best possible speed.
He held the pose another moment, then gave an equally dramatic turn and stalked off the bridge.
Interesting, Thrawn murmured. I assume that was on purpose.
You wanted to see the Heart World, Arulani said. Now we're going to. Make a note, Senior Captain,
Wutra'o added.
You can ask and suggest and show why your ideas make sense, but when politicians are involved...
She waved toward the viewport in an imitation of Ilparg's earlier posture.
That is how it's done.
Chapter 9. Once again, the star flares faded, and the Vigilant was back in space normal.
Leo Aeon Heartworld bearing 20 degrees port, 12 nadir,
Octremo announced from the helm.
Arrived precisely on target, as Chiss Skywalkers always do.
Acknowledged,
Arulani said, suppressing a smile at that last definitely non-standard comment. The entire bridge crew had quietly seethed at Ilparg's disparaging comments about Ciri's navigation back at Urch. Fleet officers and warriors held their Skywalkers dear, but most of them had kept their feelings to themselves. Octremo, who as helm officer had naturally worked the closest with the girl, had apparently decided to risk reprimand in order to throw a small dig at the ambassador. His protective attitude probably wasn't hurt by the fact that his Drock family were strong rivals to Ilparg's own Boadil family. Not that Ilpark probably noticed the comment. He was standing beside Arulani's command chair, his eyes on the distant planet, his mind clearly elsewhere than the Vigilance Bridge. Arulani looked back at the planet and the ships clustered around it, the brief moment of amusement disappearing. Most of the vessels out there were undoubtedly Leo Aeoan. Freighters, patrol ships, two low-orbit blue dock repair stations, possibly a warship or two. The old records suggested there was at least one black dock in much higher orbit, raising the possibility of another warship in the area. Though if it was undergoing repairs, it could probably be ignored. The question was whether there were any Nicardoon ships in the mix, there to keep an eye on the locals.
Sweep complete,
Senior Commander Abek Leonov called from the sensor station.
No matches to the Nicardoon ship we saw at Urch.
Which didn't prove anything, Orlani knew. Aside from the oversized viewports and the particular placement of the main weapons clusters, none of the Nicardoon ships she and Thrawn had run into looked exactly like any of the others. Certainly Yiv didn't seem to go with any kind of standard silhouette.
Traffic control is hailing us, Admiral,
Wutro said.
Never mind them,
Ilpark said before Orlani could reply.
Get me someone in the regime diplomatic office. If they had anything to do with that Urch business, I want to have it out here and now.
A moment, Ambassador,
Orlani said, looking over her shoulder at the bridge hatch. Thrawn was apparently running late.
We're waiting for Senior Captain Thrawn to arrive.
What do we need him for?
Because he's the one who can tell us if there are Nicardoon ships out there.
The obvious reply ran through Orlani's mind.
Because he has a feel for tactics that will be crucial if this thing blows up. Because he's got a track record in combat situations that most Chiss Commodores and Admirals would give their blood firstborn for.
But she had more tact than Commander Octremo. She also had none of his family rivalries to deal with.
Because I want him here, and I'm the Admiral, she said instead.
Ilpark made a little huffing noise.
Fine, he said. But he'd better not be long.
The hatch slid open, and Thrawn stepped onto the bridge.
My apologies, Admiral, he said as he crossed to Orlani and Ilpark. Apologies, Ambassador. My studies took longer than expected.
What studies were those, Senior Captain?
Ilpark asked suspiciously.
Tactical data, Orlani put in.
Tactical data?
Ilpark repeated scornfully.
Is that what the expansionary fleet calls art these days?
Orlani clenched her teeth.
The first rule of strategy is to know your enemy, Ambassador, she said. That includes their battle tactics, but also their history, their philosophy, and yes, sometimes even their art. Except the first two,
Ilpark said, the disdain still in his voice.
The third is of little to no value. However, now that Senior Captain Thrawn has graced us with his presence, perhaps you'd be good enough to contact the diplomatic office as I requested.
Certainly, Ambassador,
Wutro said, stepping to Ilpark's side and deftly easing him away from Orlani and Thrawn.
We can hail them better from the comm station. This way, please.
Thank you for trying,
Thrawn said softly as he came up beside Orlani.
Don't worry about it,
Orlani advised.
Sometimes it's good to have your talents underestimated. Though not when your career is being evaluated,
she added silently to herself.
What did you find?
Our Leo AOI art files are extremely limited,
Thrawn said.
But they should be adequate to our needs.
Glad to hear it,
Orlani waved toward the viewport.
There's your canvas. Paint me something.
For a moment, Thrawn stood silently, his eyes tracking across the scene in front of them. Orlani shifted her attention between him and the tactical display, wondering when the Leo AI were going to make their move. If the Nicardoon were here, this group must have heard about the Urch incident by now. Could the Urchivki have somehow failed to identify the Vigilant before it escaped from their encirclement? Impossible. Could they perhaps not have at least one communications triad on the entire Urchivki capital planet capable of transmitting a message this far? Even more unlikely. So what were the Nicardoon waiting for? Unless the whole thing was just a product of paranoia and imagination. The alien nations out here were always fighting among themselves. Ar'alani knew that all too well. If the Nicardoon were just some small-time species the Chiss hadn't run across, and their battles were purely local ones...
Those 9 fighters, Thrawn said,
pointing to a group of small ships just coming around the planetary disk.
The craft themselves are a variant of Leo AO in design, but their formation and flight pattern aren't typical.
Maybe they've updated their tactics since the last time you saw them, Ar'alani suggested.
No, Thrawn said slowly. Leo AOI like vertical formations. Their artwork clearly shows that. They would normally put 9 ships like that in a 3-stack wedge. This formation is planar and far more spread out. Ar'alani nodded.
That was definitely not a stacked wedge formation.
Looks like it's designed for a pincer maneuver, too.
Indeed, Thrawn said. Attack, not defense. Again, contrary to the usual Leo Aeon predisposition. But it's not just the formation. The pilots seem hesitant, somehow. As if this formation is new to them.
Maybe they're fresh recruits.
All 9 of them? Thrawn shook his head. No. Those are one-person gunboats. The Leo AOI would never put that many untried pilots alone, without a more experienced ship and crew nearby in case of trouble. Certainly not that deep in the gravity well.
I agree that's how they did things before, Ar'alani said. But fleets change doctrine all the time. Maybe not this drastically, but they do adjust and adapt to new tech or situations.
This is Leo Aeon Orbital Command,
a voice came over the speaker. Ar'alani blinked. She'd been so focused on the distant ships and Thrawn's analysis that she'd almost forgotten their ostensible purpose for being here.
This is Ambassador Beredil Pargasoy of the Chiss Ascendancy,
Ilparg replied, with all the dignity and arrogance Ar'alani had come to expect from the diplomatic corps in general, and Ilparg in particular.
I wish to speak to someone in the diplomatic office concerning the aggressive treatment we received a few days ago at the Urchivki capital of Urch.
What makes you think the Leo Aeon regime has anything to do with the Urchivki?
The voice came back.
There was a Leo Aeon ship present when the Urchivki attempted to capture our ship,
Ilparg said.
Ar'alani hissed out a breath. What the hell did Ilparg think he was doing? Handing over information like that, especially without getting anything in return, was the height of foolishness.
Ambassador.
No, let him go,
Thrawn said, closing a warning hand over her arm.
Let's see their reaction to who we are.
Ar'alani scowled. Yes, that would be Thrawn's plan, giving the Leo AOI a nudge and seeing how they reacted. All well and good, provided the reaction wasn't to throw everything they had at the intruders. Still, the Vigilant was a fully armed Night Dragon, and they weren't yet too deep into the Heart World's gravity well. No matter what the Leo AOI had, Ar'alani had no doubt she could get them out with only minimal damage to her ship. Around the side of one of the blue docks, she saw something move into view and felt her eyes widen.
Uh-oh,
someone across the bridge breathed. Ar'alani's hands closed involuntarily into tight fists. It was a warship! A huge warship. Battle dreadnought class, at least. Half again the Vigilant size. Its flanks bristled with weapons clusters, angular lines marked sections of heavy armor, tight-spaced patterns of nodes proclaimed the existence of a strong electrostatic barrier. And the overly large bridge viewport, the arrogantly, invitingly overly large viewport, marked it as Nicardoon.
Admiral?
Wootra O asked, a hint of urgency in her voice. Ar'alani eyed the Nicardoon warship, noting particularly the vectors and positions of the ships around it, then gave the tactical display a long, careful look.
Hold course, she ordered Octremo. They're not making